This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.
Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today we have a guest that I'm personally very excited to have on. It's Sarah Grillo. She is a marketing consultant, also a blogger. Also, she has her own podcast, which you have to listen to. We're going to make sure that her podcast is in the show notes. And she's a very, very well-known writer, not only from her blogs, but also in periodicals and financial services. Today, we are going to pick Sarah's brain on how to collaborate as an advisor to reach the right audience. So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt, what's cooking, buddy?
Oh, well, what's cooking is I can't wait to see what's going to come out of your brain on this, because this is such a huge issue that I think a lot of advisors, Sarah, just get up to the plate. You know, somebody pitches them a ball and they don't even realize the ball's being pitched to them. And when we were preparing for the podcast, you kind of broke this down a little bit. Do you mind just kind of giving us a little bit of a breakdown on how you help and that, what you've written about this collaboration idea?
You sure betcha. So let's be real about what financial advisor social media looks like. Most advisors don't have huge followings. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's, you know, like Winnie Sun, for example, who I love, who was on my podcast, has 300,000 people following her on Twitter. She has actually a TV production background. So she was, you know, kind of had a leg up to begin with on this. But the average advisor has like 52 people following them on LinkedIn. Okay. We're not talking about big social media footprints here. So typically what happens is a marketing consultant, they get, you know, I got to do social media. I read this article, got to be on social. They get hooked up with a marketing consultant that's like, okay, for $2,000 a month, we're going to do the Facebook ads. We're going to write you some blogs. The problem is their native audience really isn't big enough to have any leads coming from it. Because I personally believe, I've seen this in my practice, I think you need at least 2,000 views a month before you're really going to be getting any significant traction. That's no small amount of attention. Mm-hmm. So how do you get that attention? Here's what advisors are doing wrong, and it's frustrating them. It's wasting a lot of their money. And most of all, it's wasting a lot of their time. But then it's also creating this kind of bad attitude that a lot of them have, this resistance of marketing doesn't work. I can't meet rich people online. And they throw the whole thing out the window. So if you have had this experience, or if you're about to throw social media out the window, I'm going to tell you how to use social media to its best use, which is being social, which everyone forgets about, instead of just broadcasting onto your audience of 52 and a half people. Mm-hmm. Here's how to get in front of the audience that is already gathered for you. Because that's what successful people do. The people that grow their followings understand there is somebody out there that is already being listened to, that is already being followed by the person, by the people that I want to get in front of. So in a way, you are using the other person to do your marketing for you instead of you one by one getting people's attention.
How do you find those people, though, Sarah? I mean, where do I even begin? I mean, it sounds like you just open up this magnificent door, but it's blank behind it. What's my first step?
So let's say that you want to work with entrepreneurs. Okay. You want to work with businesses, okay? The advisors that I talk to that say they work with business owners, I'm scratching my head why you people aren't like on the cover of Forbes, okay? Because businesses are all online. Business owners are information-hungry people, most of them, are following some kind of a business coach or an influencer like Gary Vaynerchuk, Grant Cardone, Tai Lopez. That's an example. So if you don't know who the influencers are that your audience is following, then do a very simple thing and go to some of your clients or some of your friends or somebody you know that's a business owner and say, who do you follow on social media? Social media actually takes care of this for you, where you can see, for example, on LinkedIn, who the influencers are that people are following. You can see that if you look at their LinkedIn profile page. So I understand it can be kind of a shot in the dark, and that's okay. But there are there's millions of things published on this. So, for example, if you want to get in front of wine people, wine connoisseurs, you want to get in front of people that love wine. What are the top wine podcasts? Type into Google top wine podcasts, and then you see there's a list. There's got to be some kind of a blog written about that. What do you think?
It really is. It is really that simple. I think the problem that I've seen is advisors aren't putting value into those aspects of social media because they don't truly understand the power of that blogger, the influence of that blogger, of that podcast. How do you convince people? I mean, do you just walk up to them? And because I feel like doing this every once in a while, just walking up to them and just slapping them across the face and saying, you're 20 years behind, you know, wake up to the power of social. And I loved that you said be social. I'm coming back to that, by the way. But I want to, how do you get them off the fence, Sarah? What do you do to wake them up, to shake them to the point of realizing that what you said is exactly that easy and how they can do it?
Well, so the first thing is that a lot of people have found me through my relationship with such an influencer,
sure,
which is Advisor Perspectives Magazine, where I regularly have articles. So that's the first thing. And I say to them, you know, this strategy that I'm telling you to do, I myself used, and that's why we're talking today. The other thing is I myself, and this goes for anything that I do in my own practice, I would never say something that I myself wouldn't do. I'm just real like that. So, and most of the time too, I actually am doing it at concurrently with my clients who are also doing it. So for example, I have a podcast and I got somebody on there that was kind of like many people consider him a competitor. We do something that's kind of similar, but I had him on my podcast anyways. And he was so nice. He was just a nice person and he put his stuff onto his social media and then leads were coming from it. So if I can tell people that story because I'm real, because I take action and I do the things I say to do, and I can say to them, look, what I'm telling you to do, I just did, and it put leads in my pipeline. So I'm not imagining things here or making things up. I know for a fact that this works. And there's so much value in that, just being real and straight up with people.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here because you are not a financial advisor. Overcome that.
That's true. I'm not a financial advisor, but I know that there's so many advisors who are not doing this. I think it's way more common for a marketing person like me to be all over the place. And people are really used to hearing from marketing people. So if you could be that advisor that comes across not as 99% of other advisors, like you're not going to be able to. See, here's the thing. I don't think you can appear with the influencer like the typical financial advisor. I don't think you're going to get on somebody's podcast. I don't think you're going to get on somebody's blog. I don't think you're going to get on Seth Godin's blog, right? I don't think you're going to be in a video cast with Tim Ferriss if you're talking about a variable annuities, mm-hmm. Okay? What you would do very well to talk about is not to be that advisor person, but to be more of the voice of the street and a financial advocate. That's the position you should take. So, for example, divorced people, right? I'm a divorced financial advisor. You don't market yourself like that. The way that you would get on to some kind of a show or get into somebody's audience is that you would say, I have very, very detailed knowledge firsthand of what somebody should do if they think they're about to divorce, if they think they're about to get married, if they are going through a divorce, and it is specific to your audience. Mm-hmm. That would be very atypical for an advisor to say. What they would most likely say is, I'm a financial advisor with fill in the blank, mm-hmm. Okay, whatever brokerage firm or whatever RIA firm with always like a mountain, lake, or rock, or like tree in the title of it. Very cliched names, right? These advisors have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I'm with like Black Rock Tree Mountain, Mountain Beach Twig Financial. I have lots of blogs about that, by the way. I know I'm very controversial. We should discuss that too, but
We just read that, by the way, your latest Advisor Perspectives article about the cliched images. Our team, we were rolling because they're everywhere. Oh, that was such a great article.
I mean, that's what I'm saying is the point of it is, and I'm not afraid to just be bad. Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to name my podcast, like, what was it? Like the Bad Girl Podcast or something like that. But I think somebody already took that. So I had to name it what it's named now, which isn't permanent. I think I'm going to change it in the future. But so what I'm saying is, yes, that it's not that common. It's not that easy for financial advisors to market themselves. It's not as easy to market with influencers as it would be for a marketing person, because advisors typically have an agenda that I think doesn't go with what a lot of influencers really want to hear and what their audiences want to hear. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you should know, though.
Yep.
That's exactly what you should tailor your strategy around, being the ding, 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 ding opposite of what a financial advisor markets like.
You said social, be social. And I want to highlight that thought. Be social, don't be financial. There's if one of the people who I follow and who was a friend of mine, he said, you know, Matt, why is somebody going to go to my podcast to learn about the markets? They're going to go to CNBC. They're going to go to Fox News. They're going to go to whatever, right? They're going to come to my podcast because I'm going to be talking about life. I'm going to be talking about, you know, things that like maybe are implications of different things. Oh, we just had a gentleman who did a 100-mile race, one of our clients in Colorado, over 30 hours. And his last two podcasts that we did, we talked about the race. Sarah, they're killing it. These podcasts, everybody wants to listen because they already know he's a financial guy. They don't care about the financial stuff.
That's right.
This dude ran 100 miles. I mean, how awesome is that?
Well, yeah, but I would just say, I mean, that to me would be slightly distracting if I were the audience. I mean, you want to come across as not the typical financial advisor, but that doesn't mean that you kind of just want to talk about your hobby of this or that. You know, for example, if you have you have to make it relevant to finance. Okay. So it is valuable for people to listen to. So
how would you do that? I'm going to interrupt you. I'm sorry. How would you do that? So here's a gentleman. He trained for 4 months. Right. He ran the 100-mile race. He did write down a whole bunch of these. This is what I learned about myself and about life. And that's actually what this podcast was about. But what would you consult this person on how to use extracurricular activities like that to be social and to get attention?
Well, there would be something about, I mean, running itself is not a financial topic, but running ties into health. So you could perhaps draw the connection that many runners, especially ones that can perform these outstanding physical actions, are in probably better shape than the average person. Mm-hmm. So the subject would be, okay, so if you do have extremely good health, let's say your life expectancy is going to be much longer than the average person, what should you know about your health transitions as you're in good health now, what happens for when you might not always be? Because, and it could be about something like this, the runner's blind spot. Having extremely good health at the moment doesn't mean that 30 years from now you will. Mm. Here's what many runners aren't keeping in mind. For example, knee injuries, right? Many runners, here are the injuries that runners are more likely to have than someone who doesn't run, how they manifest, at what point they manifest, and what you should know about that in terms of your healthcare coverage in the short, medium, and long-term future.
Man, I just put you on the spot with that. That was freaking awesome.
Or like you could do it with pets. I mean, I could just say, for example, myself, I'm a dog lover. And so, you know how like dogs are a rage with our population, especially millennials. If you're targeting millennials, it's a big question for a lot of advisors. How do I get in front of millennials? Dogs are common with millennials because many of them are delaying the decision to get married. Lonely pets fill that void. Pets cost a fortune. And a great financial topic would be, how do I financially plan for my dog? Hmm. You know, like for example, I love the English Bulldog. I don't have one because one of the main reasons is I have no idea what financially that would bring me to, because they have the bulldogs, they have the cute little snout that's kind of, you know, it complicates their breathing, the way that their breathing is set up. So how do you, for example, handle pet insurance? Is the pet insurance offered by your employer enough? How do I get pet supplemental insurance? Like, if you're talking to me and I love English Bulldogs. I can't get one. And you're a financial advisor. You're having that on your show, or even better, you're having this on a show that, so, I mean, I think Caesar, some guy named Caesar is like this big dog pet person. He's some famous dog trainer. Why wouldn't I listen? I would absolutely listen to that podcast. And I might be like, you know, that's really cool. What a cool financial advisor. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want to be, that cool financial advisor. Plus, the guy would let you on his podcast because he's like, this is something that no one's talking about. It's going to help me. It's going to, okay, this is the key thing, advisors. Be social. Empathize with the influencer. You going on there to talk about variable annuities is not going to help the dog expert. What's going to help the dog expert is if he can be that person. Like, think about his world. He's competing with who all of us are competing with, the Kardashians, you know, like the news. He's competing with the news feed. The fact that, you know, like Cardi B or, you know, like people in Love and Hip Hop, that show, like, you know, we're competing with all the stuff that's out there, the really sensational marketing. But then also he's competing with other dog experts. How is this going to help his position versus other dog experts?
Yeah. How long does this take, though? Let's talk about time in. I have my own opinions about this on how long it takes to gain momentum to really utilize and have this opportunity with social. Is this, do you have a way to streamline it, or how do you set expectations with your followers on how to make this whole thing work?
Well, but see, you're not gathering the audience one by one. The audience is out there for you. The dog guy has 100,000 people following him. The wine person has 50,000 people following him. Do the research, get a list, find out who they are. Reach out to them. A lot of times they have editorial schedules that, you know, you might not be able to get on for a few months. But, I mean, we're not talking about years and years. Like people say with SEO, like it's going to take you 6 months before you get like a Google. I mean, we're not building a Google presence for ourselves here. The 100,000 people are already there.
Yeah.
Following the person. So it actually can be very immediate.
Wow.
And that's the whole advantage of it, advisors. This is what I'm saying. Like, stop wasting your time and money trying to build it from 52 to 53 followers on LinkedIn. Just take the easy way. Like, I don't know how else I can make it clear to people. And then no one does this. My clients do it. I'm doing it with them. But I don't see this. I don't see financial advisors on the dog show.
I don't either.
Get on the dog show, financial advisors.
There are so many shows like that. I love this. I have a friend of mine who raises dogs, puppies for prison, and he's a financial advisor. 90% of what he puts on his page is about puppies. So he brings people there because he's a dog lover too. I have a St. Bernard. I don't know if you can hear him snoring, but he's laying right next to me here. And then we just have a rescue puppy. And I'm a huge dog person too. If you post something on social media about dogs, I'm probably going to read it. And I love the pet insurance idea, or, you know, how to take care of a dog later in life. I love that. See, that's the fun thing about you is I totally put you on the spot there. We didn't pre-plan any of that. And because of how your brain works, which I want to pivot into the whole being controversial and just how your brain works, is fundamentally unique and so valuable to our industry, because most of the people, as you know, are very linear thinkers, and you just pulled that out of nowhere. So let's talk about, how does Sarah's brain work? How do you make that work for you? And how do you stay in this controversial sort of real world that you live in and still be as successful as you've been in such a conservative environment?
Oh, thank you. So that's so nice of you to say, by the way. So, I mean, first of all, I just want to say that being controversial isn't about being the way that most people think of being controversial. It's not about swearing. If you notice, I mean, I think it's rare that I've ever cussed on any of my public messaging. I maybe will use slang terms, but I try not to use anything that's offensive. If I ever have used a term that is inherently offensive, then I apologize, but I'm pretty good about that. I don't cuss. And I'm also not, like, I'm not wearing like a shirt with a neckline, you know, like halfway down my torso. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to, like, be, you know, on Yo MTV Raps here. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not unprofessional. So that's the first thing, is many people think, oh yeah, I'm just going to let my hair down and being myself means that. And it doesn't, because you still have to understand that you have to be within a certain band, because it is a conservative audience that you're speaking with. So in terms of being being who you are, I mean, I think this is what happened for me. I'm going to tell you a personal story that, to be honest with you, is something that not many people really hear about from me, but it's that for many years I lived in a box. All my creativity was kind of pent up because I went to Harvard, and I went to Harvard right after high school, and I was very young and I had all these expectations on me. You know, I have a wonderful, wonderful family, but they and I myself, I would never blame them for this. I myself at that age was naive, and I didn't have people in my circle that kind of clued me into the fact that the expectations that would be on me for the rest of my life because I went to Harvard were, I mean, at times crushing. And it really, you know, I always gravitated towards languages and creative things, but I felt like I couldn't major in that, even though I did end up doing it, because I had to work. That was how I got into finance. I had an internship at Fidelity Investments. I had to work. I'm from you know what kind of background I was from if I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, but I had to actually work at the Harvard Faculty Club, and it was so humiliating. It was for $10 an hour, which at that point when I was in college was a lot of money, but it was extremely heartbreaking in a way for me because professors used to go there with their students and I had to wait on them, and it was just embarrassing. And also, like, I wanted to be that top student that the professors loved and would take to lunch, and I never got to be because I always had to work so much. So I got this job at Fidelity Investments because I was so sick of, like, cleaning up cake from dirty dishes, you know, and being in the sweatshop, so to speak. And so I got this job at Fidelity because I was an English major. I was always a talented writer, but I always, you know, the signs were so clear. Like, I would win writing contests, and I got, you know, writing was my best subject at Harvard, but I denied it. I resisted. I wrote a blog about this in Advisor Perspectives about resistance. I had this fear of doing something creative because we were just kind of raised to believe that when you go to Harvard, you're taught you have to be like an investment banker, investment manager, something that was in that cachet. And it led me totally to the wrong way. And so after Lehman crashed, it was the first time where my world was shattered and my identity was shattered. But a new thing was born, and it was my creativity was finally allowed to come out, because at that point, the competition was so stiff. I became an entrepreneur. It was really my only option to make money for myself because no one was getting back in. At that point, the world was caving down. And but it taught me that really I could see, and it was hard. It was really tearful for me, actually. But I'm so happy that I did that, because now I can empower other people with this message of don't deny your true self and listen. And just the only thing that really is certain in life is the truth. But I was denying the truth for so long.
The most successful people that I have run into in my life, not just personally, but professionally, have always understood their truth. So we're going to take this to a little different level here, if you don't mind. Just being receptive to hearing your truth is one thing, but do you believe that you have to go through some sort of crisis in order to come to that realization, or do you think it can be instigated in another way?
I don't think you have to go through a crisis, but I think what advisors are going to find is that when you have First Asset Management out there, Scott McKillop was on my show just recently. Shout out to Scott if you're listening to this. But you have people out there that can do asset management for $500 an account. You get the robos out there doing paperless account setup. I mean, look at what the competition has in store for you, advisors. I think that you got to step your game up. And whether or not you want to, in a few years, there's no way people are going to be paying $50,000 more than the next person, and you're going to find that out. So, but maybe you don't have to deal with it right now. I would just say, if you're going to do marketing and have it get any kind of return, you're going to have to not say what 99% of advisors are out there saying, but it's so easy to fall into that. I know. I mean, there's fears, you know, fears of compliance, fears of what the boss is going to say, fears of what the clients will think. There's so many ways to get around it, though.
There is. And part of it is not necessarily always talking about finance. Our podcasts and our social media stuff goes through compliance super fast when they're not talking about, as you have said, you know, variable annuities, life insurance, ETFs and stuff like that.
That's right. What are they going to say about the fact that I discuss my love of English bulldogs?
Yeah.
They're not going to say anything. In fact, do you know that so many times my clients come to me and say, you know, the compliance officer loved this piece. You were talking about it. Look at it from the compliance officer standpoint. I mean, especially at these bulge bracket firms where there's a million advisors, they got to worry about the one person that's going to try to scam the world, because there's always one, and they do have a job to do. So what they do is they intentionally straight arm everybody because they have to, because they're just playing to that one bad player out there that they have to weed out. And as a result, everybody gets kind of maligned. But if you establish initially, like Winnie Sun talked about this on her podcast, she does tons of content every day. If you establish that trust initially with the compliance officer, where they know that you're not going to do anything uncool, then you're going to have so much of an easier time with it. If you write things that actually they are interested in, like we're talking, like what I'm saying is be social advisors. Understand the compliance officer is a person. Yeah. I have essentially have to sell my ability to produce content that will not get the compliance officer in trouble to the compliance officer. Mm-hmm. What is it that's going to appeal to that person as a human being? Consider that.
Yeah. And you know what?
Everything's a sale in a way. Like no money exchanged, but right. Something of value for something of value. That's what you're doing with that compliance officer.
And not only is the compliance officer a human being, but so are the people who are reading your crap. And so remembering the human component of that, that was fantastic. Closing thoughts, Sarah. What are you going to leave us with today?
So the first thing is, now that I've told you what to do, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how to do it. So when you go to pitch whoever it is, the influencer, be cool about it. And just some guidelines to follow. If you're going to want to be on someone's podcast or YouTube channel or in their blog, actually know what it's about. And I'm not saying it to be flip or anything, but I'm saying it because so many people approach me about my podcast and they want to be guests on it because they just wrote a book or something. And one person actually said, have you listened to any shows? No. So in other words, you're telling me that you want to get, I'm about to put you in front of 12,000 people, maybe more, and you don't even have the respect for my business to try to figure out how you could help me serve my listeners better. And this is really just about you getting your plug in. Adios, amigo.
Yeah.
Buenos dias. Catch me on Twitter. Okay. It's disrespectful. Respect the influencer's position and what they're trying to do in their business, and you'll be way more likely to be successful. The other thing is actually know what it is that you want to say. You know, I mean, I've had people come to me and say, I just wrote a book. I want to be on your podcast. It's, you know, I know you talk to a lot of advisors, so I thought it would be useful for them. How? Like, don't make me go through the iteration of like having to read your book, having to look up your book, having to find out what your book is about, and then having to think of an idea. Who are you, Princess Diana? Like, do the work for me. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes if you do that and you propose an idea and I don't like the idea, it doesn't mean I don't like you. Because a lot of times a really good business person will say, you know, I don't really think I need to talk about that on the podcast, but I like that idea. Give me another one. Or they might kind of tweak it, or give them three ideas, give them three options. See what I'm saying? So these will all improve your chances. The more that you know about the venue or the channel that you're trying to get onto, the better it will be. Like if you can spout out, like for example, you know, I mean, I think we all have an influencer that we follow. If you can spout out like five quotes or five things they've talked about from the last shows that they've done, I mean, it's going to kind of ingratiate them because they're going to be like, this is a loyal follower. Like, this is someone who's, I'm getting advertising revenue from this person, actually. That's cool. Mm-hmm. See, so what I'm saying is, like, kind of try to put yourself in their position. I mean, I think we've all been on the receiving end of a bad sales pitch. And when you reach out to these, quote unquote, big shots, I have a podcast about this, how to reach big shots on LinkedIn. Do it in a way of giving that is going to help to increase their business success, or at least make them see the value in that. And I think you'll be a lot more successful. Now, don't get me wrong. You're not going to be successful every time. You know, you're going to try to get on Gary Vaynerchuk's podcast. I mean, you may need to work up to that a little bit. You might not want to go for the big kahuna. You know what I'm saying? Like, is that a bad word? See, there you go, for example. Like, I don't know if that's a bad word. If that was, delete that out. Okay, Matt?
Yes, ma'am. Anyway, I will absolutely do that.
Don't try to go for the big shot, the big shot, like immediately. you might want to kind of lead up to it a little bit too, because there's also your track record where, I mean, think about what that person's going to see when they go to your social media page. Like, if they see that you've done nothing, you've never been on a podcast, you've never written anything about this subject, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to get to be interested in you, and you have, like, nothing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, not going to show much credibility to them. But if you've been on, like, even a few minor shows, they might kind of know something about them or whatever that's going to say to them, you know, if this person has a track record. Like, if I put this person on, they're not going to be like, and choke. They're going to actually maybe be okay.
I love podcasters who are on our podcast because I do know, because I can listen, much like I did with yours. I know, one, I know what to expect. Number two, I know that you're good at it. And number three, you're comfortable with the medium. I think that's all great advice. I made that vital mistake a little while ago. I tried to get on a guy named Joe Polish's I Love Marketing podcast, and the gatekeeper just stiff-armed me every which way from Sunday, because what he did was he looked me up and realized that, yeah, when we have a moderately successful podcast, but I haven't been on a whole bunch of other people's podcasts. And he's like, you haven't been on enough other people's podcasts. I was like, ooh, I was like, that's a great, you don't, hey, dude, you know what? You're right. I haven't. And then, of course, he tried to sell me something, but I thought it was a wonderful experience for me, because I took a lot in Sarah, you don't have to get beat up like I did. Just listen, right? You have people that you have access to through podcasts, through blogs, all of these resources out there. All of our listeners need to realize that the information that you're looking for has probably already been written. And if you know how to use Google well, we call it our Google Foo at our office. If your Google Foo is moderately good, you're going to be able to find some great stuff. And Sarah, we're going to make sure that we have a link to your podcast on our podcast notes. Please, please, please listen to her podcast. All you have to do is type in Sarah Grillo into iTunes. She pops right up immediately. The Big Wigs one I thought was fun. But
Big Shots.
Yes, I'm sorry. Big Shots. Or yeah, I don't know about the Kahuna thing, by the way. I need to look that up too.
I don't know either. Sorry.
I'm a huge consumer of podcasts, but it's so neat to see the consistency between your blogs and how you speak. After I listen to your podcast and I was reading some of your blogs, I could hear your voice in the blogs. And I think that's really cool. And that's a real talent.
Well, thank you. But it goes back to being authentic and not being afraid to have that filter on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it takes a while. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sometimes I've said certain things that I've kind of, ooh, you know, like, shouldn't have said that. But I'd rather, it's like my dad told me when I was playing basketball in seventh grade, he said, it's okay if you get a few fouls, because that just means that you're playing aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't get a technical foul.
Sure.
You know, like that's the other thing is, like, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to maybe say stuff you shouldn't have said doing that. But overall, as long as you're successful, then it works.
And it is an amazingly professional thing, in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, to apologize. I have made huge mistakes in my professional career, and I have learned, because I just think it's important to be at least a little bit humble and say, hey, man, I really messed up. I'm sorry. We just did that with a prospect recently. Our team just had a big misstep, and I called him up and I'm like, I'm so sorry, man. We just totally dropped the ball on this. And I thought he was going to fire us, to be honest, because we kind of dropped the ball. But he was so appreciative that somebody took responsibility and said that they were sorry, that now he's one of our best clients. So even if you do make a misstep, at least you're pushing your own boundaries. At least you're trying instead of just being safe. My old boss said to me, actually, he used to speak and say this all the time, but he used to say, you know, I want to arrive at death on fire, bleeding with scars all over my body, because so many people, especially in our industry, are trying to arrive at death safely. And that's how they handle their marketing. And Sarah, I love that you take, you know, the proverbial bull by the horns here. You are very real. You have very, very good information. I think you're an excellent writer. I think you have an excellent podcast. I learn a lot from your podcast. I want to implement some of the stuff that you do just from a personality standpoint into our podcast here. So I thank you very much for everything that you're doing. We're going to make sure we have links to all of your stuff. If you're not following Sarah, please, dear God, click and follow and read. Get up to date on what's going on. Allow yourself to get into her brain, because as scary of a place as it might be sometimes.
Totally scary.
But it's awesome, right? It's a great ride. It's super fun. And it's just great information. So, Sarah, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it so much.
If you have not subscribed to this podcast yet, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time we come up with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And that way you can share it with your friends and family. If you have somebody who's been teetering on the edge in your financial services world who has not used social media yet or doesn't understand the value of what we talked about today, please make sure you click that share button so that it goes directly to them and they can learn as you just did. So for everybody with Sarah's team, this is Matt Hallern from Top Advisor Marketing, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.